It's good to see all of you here tonight, and thank you so much for joining in our song service. Thank you, Joey, and we are so grateful for all of our men that take turns leading singing. We have good song services here. You know, in 2 Samuel, we start off reading the story of Mephibosheth way on back in chapter 4, and I had him reading in chapter 9 tonight, but I want to begin in the book of Romans. You say, well, what's he going to do over in Romans? Well, Romans 15 and verse 4 tells us, for whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope. When we go back and read these stories, they're here and recorded for us for our benefit and to help create hope. And we're going to talk tonight about the lessons from the days of David, the king of Israel, after the death of Saul. And it's one of the finest stories of the Old Testament. It points to some of the finer virtues in life. It points to the value of having good friendships. And it talks about the effect that they can have in our later life. If we have good friendships and years go by and things happen as life does, they have an effect on us in later life. And all of us probably are acquainted with the life of David, but some of you may not be too familiar with the story of Mephibosheth. And that's what we're going to talk about today, because you see, in 2 Samuel chapter 4, there was a raging battle, terrible battle out at Mount Gilboa. And on that occasion, the crown prince and the king of Israel was killed. Saul and his son Jonathan. A messenger had rushed back to the palace in 2 Samuel 4 to tell all of them the horrible news that the king had died and that Jonathan, his son, had died. And the people in the palace were very afraid for their lives, afraid that the enemies were going to come in and take possession. And so they grabbed the children and they fled. And the nurse that grabbed the young child Mephibosheth, who apparently from this passage was 5 years old, wasn't right sure why he had to be carried, but we'll learn more later. Mephibosheth was being carried, and they were running away from the castle, the palace, and she dropped him in 2 Samuel 4 and verse 4 and crippled him up so bad that he never could walk again. He was lame in both feet from that injury. It's a horrible beginning for a five-year-old. But the battle actually ended the rule of King Saul of Israel and set in place the situation that God had intended the whole time, and that is that David would rule out of the house of Judah. Saul was not from Judah, and Saul was not God's anointed king to begin with. Israel had insisted they wanted a king to be like all of the other nations. God let them have their way, and things didn't turn out so well because Saul did not always obey God. But David now is in position to be the king of Israel. And so we come to the actual storyline here where Mephibosheth has grown up into adulthood and is living kind of incognito, unrecognized, and only a few people apparently knew who he was and where he was living at the time. And David is pondering, when we get to 2 Samuel chapter 9, after the battle of chapter 4, David is pondering if there is anyone still living out of Saul's household that he could do something to help them in order to show a kindness for King Saul's son Jonathan. Jonathan and David were extremely good friends. And Jonathan and David were such good friends that now later in life, Saul, David is wanting to do something for any descendant of the house of King Saul. And little did he know that it would be Jonathan's son, but he was wanting to do something in memory of Jonathan's son. And so he asked if there was any survivors left, anyone of the house of Saul, that he might show kindness for Jonathan's sake. And there was of the house of Saul a servant who was named Ziba. And when they had called or summoned him to David, David asked, "Are you Ziba?" And he says, "Thy servant is, yes, I am he." And the king said, is there not yet any of the house of Saul that I may show kindness of God unto him? And Ziba said to the king, Jonathan hath yet a son which is lame on his feet. So he's talking about Mephibosheth, who we'll be introduced to now in verse 6. The king said to him, where is he? And Ziba said to him, behold, he's in the house of Machir, the son of Ammiel and of Lodabar, the king of David, sent and fetched him out of the house. And now in verse 6, when Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, was come to David, he fell on his face and did reverence. And David said, Mephibosheth. And he answered, behold, thy servant. And David said to him, fear not, I have surely show thee kindness for Jonathan thy father's sake, and will restore thee all the land of Saul thy father, and thou shalt eat bread at my table continually. Mephibosheth, as the story concludes, is overcome with curiosity, if nothing else. And he says, what is thy servant that thou shouldest do, should look upon me with such a deed as this, and such a dead dog as I am? I'm a nobody. And the king called to Ziba, and Ziba was a servant in the house of Saul. We had already been introduced to him, and now he tells him, I am giving all of Saul's land and houses, buildings back to him, and I want you and your sons to go and to be over all of the properties and take care of them, but Mephibosheth is going to remain and eat all of his meals right here in my house with me. And so the story goes on, and Mephibosheth moved in, and for the rest of his life, he was a guest of King David in honor of and in respect to the friendship that he had with his father, Jonathan. David is at this point going through some sort of an emotional time in his life. Nostalgic, I guess, is a word that we'd use for it. He's reflecting back on things that were important to him. And so it comes that in the passing of time and his reflecting back on what Jonathan had meant to him, he wants to do something to someone, if there's any survivors left in that family, as a tribute to Jonathan, in memory of him. And this makes us wonder, we know that David was always meditative. He wrote all of these psalms while he was shepherding the sheep, and was a person of deep thought. And apparently in the quietness of the opportune time, he was reflecting back. And it causes me to think about our thoughts in the quietness of our time and what kind of thoughts race through our minds. You see, David was reflecting in this situation the kind of person he was. There was no one watching over him saying, hey, you're not doing right by one of Saul's descendants. Nobody said, hey, you've got to take care of him. You're now the king, but Saul was the king, and he deserves that his grandson be taken care of. Nobody said that to him. David, out of the kindness of his own heart and the love and devotion to a good friend, wanted to do something beneficial. Now, having said all of that, I want to bring it down to David's everyday life was one that maybe didn't always measure up to this, but he had character. He had true and genuine love and affection for human beings. He had every right, if we talk about human rights, he had every right to be bitter because Saul made his life miserable. David had to run, and he was constantly avoiding being put to death by King Saul. Jonathan, on the other hand, was David's devoted friend in the house of Saul. And Jonathan was able to send messages to David even while Saul was in hot pursuit of him to take his life in order to keep David from falling into a trap by coming to the king's table to eat. Jonathan had sent the signal with the arrow that he shot. He had a signal worked out with David ahead of time. If it's a short arrow, you'll know one thing, and if it's a long arrow, you'll know the other thing, that you should not come because Saul is after your life. So the question comes down to this. David has chosen not to be bitter and not to hold grudges. And this is where you and I come in, because we have to stop and think about our own hearts and our own attitudes and whether we can manifest the spirit that he had. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 31, Paul writes about bitterness and clamorings and such as that, and he tells us that all of those things are to be put away from us. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 31, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you. Now here's the parallel. David, for Jonathan's sake, is doing something extremely benevolent and compassionate. For Jonathan's sake, David is doing this. You and I are in a different situation. We are to be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven us. And so it is that there are lessons that we can learn from this particular story that we would do well to put into motion in our relationship to one another. Do we look for opportunities to do good? Do we, in the quietness of our secret thoughts, do we think kindnesses of other people, or do we think bitterness? And as I said last Lord's Day, you've stepped on my rights. And when we start letting our personal feelings and our personal rights get into this thing, it can short-circuit it all. Do we look for opportunities to do good? David didn't wait for someone to bring up the subject matter. He was looking for the opportunity. And so it is from Ephesians 4, 31 and 32. We should also be looking for someone. This episode illustrates the value of not only having the right disposition within our hearts, but also the value of having good friendships, good relationships with one another. David had that kind of a relationship with Jonathan. Evidently, this thought came upon David as he was walking down memory's lane, and it reminds us of the power of sacred memories. It's shown in the mention of the name that came straight to his mind. But when you and I go through our memories of individuals that meant so much to us, we call these precious memories, and there's a song in our hymn book that's been written with that theme, precious memories, how they linger. But I want to remind you that there are many boys and girls who grow up into adulthood who become wayward. And sometimes, because of the influence of one or both of the parents, in later years, there's something that is still within their heart that rings a bell. And if they begin to reflect back on mom and dad and the faith and things that were so important to them, if they begin to do that, then we sometimes see them want to come back to the Lord, and that they want to do the right thing. Now then, many a wayward child has been that way. In the invitations over the years, there have been hundreds upon hundreds of people over the years that have come forward when we would offer the invitation. And so many times I would talk with individuals and ask them what they wanted me to tell the church, and they would say things, something similar to this: I wasn't raised this way. Mom and Dad didn't raise me to be doing what I'm doing. And lately I've been thinking about that, and I want to do what I know is right and what Mom and Dad taught me was right. And this precious memory, you see, has worked on the heart and the soul of this child who later in adulthood, in dedication to the memory of wonderful parents that were living the right example, it draws that child back to the Lord. David might not have ever stopped to think about what Jonathan was doing for him at the time of their friendship. Jonathan is now deceased, but there were qualities in Jonathan's life that probably David absorbed, and now he has seen the benefit of that: self-restraint, tenderness, fidelity to the truth, loyalty, and honor to those with whom we have associations. Jonathan was the epitome of all of those things. And David has benefited from all of them, and therefore in memory of that person who meant so much to him, David wanted to do something. He couldn't do anything for Jonathan. Jonathan's dead. When he says, I want to do this for Jonathan's sake, it's not like saying, Jonathan needs something and I want to do this for his benefit. In essence, what he's saying is, I want to do this as a tribute to Jonathan for what he has done. I want to offer this as a way of honoring a great person. And we would do well to take more time and let our memories wander down life's pathway at individuals who have done special things for us and have meant a lot to us in shaping the direction that we travel. They might be in a position to where we can't do anything for them. But then if we will look around us, we might find someone else who is in need of a friend, in need of some specific thing. And we might be motivated by the life that that loved one, that dear friend, lived and the influence they had on us, to turn around and offer some wonderful act of kindness toward that person. This is a lesson that we can benefit from with the story of Jonathan and David's relationship, and then subsequently David and Mephibosheth's relationship. Many years ago in Valdosta, Georgia, I've told you the story of Bill Morris, but I haven't told you the whole story. Bill Morris was a very obese man and probably weighed close to 500 pounds, poor health, diabetes, and bad heart. Baptizing that man was a handful, I'll tell you. But it was a joyful day for me. But I want you to know the rest of his story. Bill Morris was in the Air Force and stationed at Moody Air Force Base, and many, many years earlier, when he was a much younger man and in good health, robust health, he had lived there, but he was not a Christian. Every Sunday, he watched a mother and a little son walking to Sunday school down Central Avenue, Valdosta, Georgia, to the Central Avenue Church of Christ. Every Sunday morning, he was able to see this, and it registered with him that these were good people, and this was a good thing that was being done. That mother was still living when we moved to Valdosta and was a member of the church there where we were working, and that son of hers, who she walked to Sunday school every Sunday morning, was one of our deacons and was on the education committee helping direct and conduct the curriculum guidance for all the teachers, a very faithful Christian family. When Bill Morris came to be baptized that day, he said, I have reflected back on this scene of the mother and the child so religiously every Sunday walking down Central Avenue from their house to the Central Church building, and I realized that that's what true Christianity was all about, and I want to be baptized and be like they are. You see, she was dead and gone, and she was really the hero of the story, the heroine, if you please, because she was the one that had the devoted faith in God that brought her to bringing her child up in the way that he should go, not even aware that another person was watching from afar and seeing her behavior. He wanted to do something that was, I don't want to say a tribute, but something similar to that, to her faith. But he wanted to do it because it was the right thing for him to do. He wanted to become a Christian because she had set the right example, and he wanted to honor her as being the source of his decision of becoming a Christian. So it's in a similar way, David is in a position where he now is the king over all this land, and quite a successful king at that. But there was someone who helped him be the kind of man that he should have been. David wanted to pay tribute to Jonathan, and thus the story of Mephibosheth comes to bear. Children may be blessed decades after parents are dead and gone. They may be blessed as they reflect back on lessons that mama and daddy taught them and caused them to make choices that are so much better than what they had been living. And perhaps they have gone on to make restitution. They go back to doing the kind of deeds that mom and dad would have been proud of. And David says that he wanted to do that for Jonathan's sake. Children may be blessed for decades after their parents are gone by the benefits that the parents have bestowed upon them, virtuous qualities that we absorb into our hearts and our souls, parents that are prayers, for example, ones who will pray with their children and have devotionals every night, makes a mark, it makes an imprint in the heart of those children. And the hope would be that as they grow older and have children of their own, they'll have a precious memory. And that memory will call them to want to come back to the Lord, but also to bring up their children after the manner in which they themselves have been brought up, with parents that prayed with them and that read the Bible and had Bible stories with them. And these sacred associations are wonderful. Mephibosheth was given all of the benefits as if he was a part of the king's family because of King Saul, of Jonathan's prince, the crown prince Jonathan, because of his relationship and influence over David. The fruit of Jonathan was a long time in being served, but it served his son very well. Parents, I'm saying this to you, don't give up the hope that somehow your children will be influenced, that years to come, that they'll be brought back to the Lord if they have strayed. Bringing up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. It's not as though that is a statement that has absolutely zero room for exceptions, because we all know that there have been children who never did come back. But we do know that if a parent is diligently living the Christian life and doing what the Lord wants us to do, that it can have that kind of a benefit. The law of nature is that that child will sooner or later reflect on the seriousness of living the kind of life that mom and dad lived. They want to come back to that. What an encouragement for parents in this present time to do good that their children in years to come will have those precious memories and want to do something for, as David said, for Jonathan's sake, for their parent or their grandparents' sake. It's not because the grandparents are going to be alive and the parents may not be alive either to know it, but they're doing it out of honor to what the parents had done for them. What an encouragement for us to live the right kind of life before our children. Nothing could be done for Jonathan, but there was no excuse for David to sit back and do nothing. He had a conscience. He had a conscience that had been helped and cultivated through the kind of person that Jonathan was. And he reflected on that, and it made him wonder, is there something I can do because of my friend Jonathan, who's dead and gone, but who meant so much to me? And then he asks if there are any survivors, and he finds Mephibosheth. What a powerful story it is, sacred to the memory of a loving friend, and hopefully for you one day, sacred to the memory of a loving parent. Jonathan's sake is going to be swapped now for the rest of our discussion with a word for Jesus' sake. Go back and read with me from Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 32 once again. Be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you. As David did something for Jonathan's sake, God is doing something for you and I for Christ's sake. That's what grace and salvation is all about. Because of Jesus' willingness to die for us, and as a tribute to that willingness on his part to die for us, God is offering us sonship, giving us the privilege of being his children. And we're to be kind one to another and tender-hearted and forgiving of one another. And in so doing, we are responding to what God has offered in memory of Jesus and his sacrifice. Picture with me now, flipping back to Mephibosheth for just a moment, a chariot pulling up to the house that mostly went obscured, and most people didn't know that somebody important lived there. Very humble cottage, probably. An officer steps out of the chariot, goes to the door, approaches the cripple, and then says to him, "The king is calling for you." Can you just imagine that if Mephibosheth knew the stories of King Saul's hatred for David, he could have been just a wee bit fearful. The Bible doesn't tell us so much that he was, though it does tell us how humble he was, because he treats himself as though he was as lowly as a dog. "Why are you doing this for me? What have I done to deserve this?" In chapter 9 of 2 Samuel and verse 8. "What have I done to deserve this?" But when he first is summoned, you can just imagine that his imagination must have run wild with, "Oh dear, is this going to be a day of revenge?" Because Saul made David's life miserable. But to the contrary, he gets there and finds out that David has a great thing in store for him, that all of the land is going to be to take care of his family members and all the needs of his household, and that he will be there with the king to eat his meals in the palace continually the rest of his life. Ziba is the servant who he and his sons are given the job of managing the orchards and the fields and all of that. And we find out in around verse 10 that Ziba had 15 sons and he had 20 servants. And that's quite a houseful. But these are the ones that were going to bring forth the fruit for their master. And then, of course, they would basically be accumulating the wealth for him and for his descendants. Mephibosheth was in a bad way. He was crippled and could not walk since he was 5 years old. Grown man now. He couldn't get out and work his plantations. He couldn't get out and work his orchards. There is a sense in which you and I would be like the Mephibosheth of this story. And that is because of sin, because we are crippled spiritually when we are in a life of sin. We're very badly in need of some act of grace, some act of kindness. And God, Ephesians 4, there where we were a moment ago, 32, God has for Christ's sake forgiven us. He paid the price. He paid the debt that he didn't owe, and God thus has been willing to forgive us. Sin can dash one down and all but destroy that person and cripple them and make it to where they don't want to walk the paths of righteousness and live in the slums of iniquity, the gall of bitterness and the bond of iniquity, poor and wretched, as the song says. But suddenly, an invitation from heaven, from the king, to come and be a part of my house, my family. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 15, Paul writes to Timothy of how to conduct himself in the house of God, which was the church of the living God, the pillar and the ground of truth. God is giving us the opportunity for Christ's sake to become a part of his family. Jesus has invited us through his shed blood to be part of his household, the church. The importance of being sons of God and of heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, Romans 8 and verse 17, if you then be children, then you are heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. The importance of sonship is beyond our ability to fathom. It has eternal consequences. But are we willing to live in the household of faith, the household of God? 1 Timothy 3:15, the house of the living God, the church, which is that house of the living God. Are we living in the household, or are we still crippled out in some obscure place in life? You see, if Mephibosheth had been disobedient to the summons, the king wants to talk to you. He wants you to come with us. If Mephibosheth had been disobedient to that summons and refused to come to the king's house, he would have missed out on a lifetime of blessings and the wealth for his entire family and all the servants that had been trying to take care of the land. They would not have had the kind of support that they got to take care of their loved ones as well. And the importance of his coming into that family is a type of the importance of you and me making our mind up that we're going to come into the family of God. As Mephibosheth came to David, we come to Christ. And for Christ's sake, God has invited us there. And for Jonathan's sake, David had invited Mephibosheth there. And it's up to you and I what we're going to do about it. Do we disbelieve God's offer of kindness, or do we take him seriously? And if we take him seriously, then we reflect back on the quality of life that Jesus lived. Peter said to Cornelius, he went about doing good. And that's the kind of person that we need to be as well. Tonight, as we end these thoughts, we're reminded again of Romans 15 and verse 4. Whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we, through the patience and the comfort of Scriptures, might have hope. If you have not experienced the kind of joy and hope that God affords us, for Christ's sake, we need to do all that we can to get our lives in harmony with him. Tonight, as we conclude our thought and sing a hymn of encouragement, if there's any way that we can encourage you to take advantage of heaven's invitation, we invite you to come now as we stand and sing.